This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Chua Eun-taek. In August, Amnesty International's delegates from around the world voted to develop and adopt policies in favor of decriminalizing prostitution. According to Amnesty, sex workers are one of the most marginalized groups in the world, and the development of this policy aims to relieve their plight. Kate Schutze from Amnesty's Law and Policy Program is joining us on the phone from Amnesty's London headquarters to explain how decriminalization would help sex workers and why are they not in favor of the Nordic model. Kate, what prompted Amnesty to take up this issue now?
Well, this is an issue that's been cropping up in some of our research throughout the globe for a number of years, and it's not something we've specifically taken on until now. Over the last 2 years, we have done quite extensive research and consultations on the issue, which has resulted in our policy calling for the decriminalisation of sex work, amongst other things.
Could you explain what this policy entails? What is being decriminalised and what remains a criminal activity?
Okay, yeah, so essentially what we're saying is that laws that directly or indirectly are used against sex workers themselves should be repealed or decriminalised. So what we found in a number of situations is that the act of selling or buying sex isn't always criminalised, but activities around that are. So operating a brothel, for example, often prohibits sex workers working together for their own safety or employing some kind of security or protection for the work that they do. We also call for a range of measures to ensure that no person is forced or coerced into sex work and that they have opportunities to leave the industry if and when they choose to do so. So that's the foundation of our policy. We don't take a position on legalising, which is going one step further and creating regulations around the industry. But what we do say is that states who want to create such laws and regulations around sex work need to make sure that they comply with human rights standards around that.
One very famous experiment is the Swedish or Nordic model. Why is Amnesty not in favour of that?
Well, first of all, we don't take a judgment call on the sex industry itself. We're not here to try and end sex work altogether. And a lot of organisations that have that aim of ending demand for sex work do promote that particular model. So what that model does is it makes the buying of sex criminal. So the clients who purchase sex are the ones who are criminalised rather than the sex workers. But what we found in the research that we've conducted, as well as the academic studies that we've looked into, is that that also creates increased risk for sex workers. And our primary concern here is reducing the risks and the harms to sex workers. And if you're criminalising those aspects of the sex industry, what you're doing is you're still placing that burden on sex workers themselves to go underground, to work in ways which are inherently harmful or more risky, because often the clients, if they're criminalised, it means that sex workers have to work in more covert ways. They're often required to go to the client's house where they might feel unsafe and unprotected, which can, of course, lead to more human rights violations, more violence, and poorer outcomes for sex workers themselves. So we're very upfront in saying we're not trying to end it altogether. We're about promoting the rights of sex workers and making sure that they can access their human rights on equal footing with everyone else.
News reports suggest that the vote was highly polarised. Can you tell us how the vote count went?
We can't talk about the exact numbers for the vote, but there was substantial support in favour of the policy. But we can't talk, of course, how individual people voted. I mean, I think the great strength of us as an organisation that it has been a very open and democratic process, the discussions around this. Of course, people are entitled to express their own personal views, even if they disagree with that policy. But we do have a forum where all those concerns were discussed. They were factored into the policy, which has changed significantly over the last 2 years when we first started those consultations and the research. So I think we have come out with a fairly strong policy that the organisation as a whole has gotten behind, but individuals themselves might have different views on that, and they're entitled to do so.
So you spoke of the studies and the research that were took into consideration before putting forth this policy or suggestion.
Yeah.
What are some of these evidence?
So we did rely on a wide range of academic research from around the globe, including looking at studies on the so-called Nordic model that you refer to, also looking at countries that have largely decriminalised or legalised sex work, but also conducting our own research. So we went to Hong Kong, Argentina, Papua New Guinea and Norway to look at what systems they've got in place, what are the main human rights concerns for sex workers. And we also consulted with a wide range of organisations, which includes survivor groups, women's organisations, anti-trafficking groups and sex workers themselves, which I think is critical to the position we've taken.
And what do you say to the argument that decriminalisation would increase the market for human trafficking?
There's no evidence that substantiates those claims that I've seen. There are some studies that make those claims, but once you look into their methodology, they're inherently flawed and they've been debunked by a lot of academics working in this area. I don't think there is any credible evidence to suggest that decriminalising sex work will either lead to an increase in sex work or an increase in trafficking. And I think when you see those statistics played out, it's very hard not to take the position that we've taken, which is primarily around protecting the human rights of sex workers.
Let me quote something that I got from your website. It supports the full decriminalisation of all aspects of consensual sex work. But is consent not a problematic concept when it comes to sex work? Like, how can you prove someone was coerced or someone was trafficked?
Yeah, so we still retain our existing policy around trafficking, which is that it should be criminalised and condemned. What we say is the problem is that the coercion or exploitation is what you need to criminalise. And there are ways to get evidence around that and prove those cases. And I think there's a difference between criminalising all forms of sex work, and some organisations do take the view that all forms of sex work is a form of exploitation. But for us, what we've the position we've taken is that, you know, in some circumstances, women or, you know, in some cases, men as well, do consent to engaging in sex work. That is consensual, and it's not our position to undermine the choices that people make. What we say is that governments do have a responsibility to ensure that those choices are the free will of people, that they protect them from the exploitation element, and that they make sure people have choices and options available to them. So one aspect of that is making sure women enjoy equal opportunity in terms of social and economic development so that they do have options outside of sex work if that's what they choose to do. And I think that is critical to our policy. It is quite comprehensive on the range of human rights issues and human rights abuses that sex workers suffer and what governments need to take in terms of steps to address that. And I think that's the overall strength of the policy. I don't see any confliction in saying that the exploitation is the problematic element. I mean, we see that time and time again in criminal law. There are certain activities that are, people can consent to and engage in, and that's a private matter for individuals. But when it becomes inherently harmful or exploitative, that's the element that you start to criminalise.
But Swedish Foreign Minister Margot Wallström said that the idea of a happy prostitute exercising her or his free choice is a myth.
That's not the position that we're promoting. I think the challenge here is that we're looking at a lot of situations where sex workers are stigmatised to a significant degree and face severe levels of violence in their communities, including from their families and the police, because of the work that they do. And the stigmas around sex worker is inherently harmful to the enjoyment of their other human rights. So I think you can't make a blanket assumption on a group of persons and go, oh, they're all happy to do this or they're all not happy to do this, because that fundamentally undermines their human rights. I think it is very important that you look at it in terms of the lived realities for those people, and the lived realities for those people is that sometimes they don't have a lot of alternatives, they don't have a lot of choices, they often face a lot of violence either before they go into sex work or because of the fact that they have gone into sex work. what we're trying to do is address those levels of violence, address the levels of discrimination. In relation to the Swedish model, I mean, again, there's not any clear evidence that the laws or approach that the government has taken there has been effective in terms of either reducing sex work overall or reducing trafficking. And I understand that the UN has requested on occasion more information from them on the assertions that government has made, and they haven't provided the information to back up their claims in respect of that.
My guest today is Kate Schutze, Law and Policy Program, Amnesty International. We're talking about decriminalizing prostitution. Up next, I'll ask her about the public relations challenge in an industry where stigmatization is pervasive. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. If you have just joined us, my guest today is Kate Schutze, Law and Policy Program at Amnesty International. She's joining us over the phone from Amnesty's London headquarters. So the Nordic or Swedish model, try to target the demand and the institutional supply of prostitution. Amnesty does not look to do that. And if, correct me if I'm wrong, so your position is that punishing the purchase of sex and operators of brothels is counterproductive?
Yeah, so what we're saying is that often laws around sex work, whilst not specifically targeting the sex worker themselves, are actually used in practice against the sex workers. And that's why we see them harmful to the way they operate and to their own safety. So that's why we call for the full decriminalisation of sex work and related aspects, including the purchase or sale of sex.
You alluded earlier, full legalisation would be a step further. Would it not be easier to regulate this industry?
I think as long as those regulations aren't over burdensome and don't have the end effect of punishing people for operating in certain ways that does improve their safety, then absolutely I think there are arguments in favour of creating a framework where sex workers actually feel safe and comfortable, you know, engaging with the police regularly, engaging with healthcare professionals, not feeling criminalised or stigmatised or judged by society so that they can't access services to support them. I think that is a win situation where they will be better able to enjoy their rights. They will have more choices in terms of leaving the industry if that's what they choose, and we will see reduced harm in that area.
Three countries have full legalization of the sex industry, which is Germany, New Zealand, and the Netherlands. Are you not persuaded by the outcome over there?
Well, I mean, I think there are challenges with each of those systems and the way that they operate. So, again, we're not going to go into the level of detail, and we do have to allow governments some flexibility to adopt policies and procedures based on the situation in their country. So I think we do go far enough in terms of saying that, you know, governments can legalise in this area, but they need to make sure that they're not taking away other human rights. You know, the New Zealand model is often referred to, and I think is a good example, but a lot of people have pointed out that that's a unique situation. You know, we're not putting up any singular country example, though, as a best practice, because the reality is that, you know, it is a work in progress, and the aim is to ensure that sex workers don't experience violence and reduce human rights abuses. But I don't think anyone's suggesting that sex workers never faced any violence in New Zealand, even though it's legalised. So I think that's where we have to be careful with these different country examples. It is about reducing the harm. There are some good practices out there, but we're not holding up any one country example as being perfect in this area.
Why is New Zealand unique? It seems like the model they have over there is working better than the one in Germany and the Netherlands.
I think from what my understanding is that they're probably less strict regulations than, say, the Netherlands would have. Germany is a federation system, so it has the Prostitution Act there has been implemented differently by different provincial governments, under my understanding. So I was surprised you didn't also mention the other example that comes up a lot. It's New South Wales in Australia as being one of the legalised examples. But like I said, each of those examples, I could think of situations where operational aspects of sex work are to some degree controlled by government, but the aim is to try and control it in a way that makes it productive and helpful to sex workers and protecting their rights and making it safer for them. And some governments do better than others in that regard.
Do you think there is a parallel to be drawn between prostitution and the war on drugs? Should prostitution be seen as a legitimate occupation that is taxable?
I think, I mean, what we're saying is that sex work should be treated as work like any other, and it should be subject to the same labour law protections as other work. So I think in a lot of ways that's the position we have taken, is that, you know, it's going to happen anyway. What we're trying to do here is reduce the harm and the negative impacts. And to some extent, people might want to draw those parallels. But yeah, absolutely, we say that it should be treated as work. It should be something that people have choices and can exercise their own choices over how they do that. And it's the responsibility of governments to make sure that they're safe when they do actually do that.
In an industry where stigmatization is pervasive, what is Amnesty Challenge in terms of public relations? How are you communicating this position to the wider public to convince governments around the world that this is the way forward?
I think that's still a work in progress, because, I mean, we've only just had the ICM decision, and that we still need to finalise the policy outcomes and the work that we'll do on this moving forward. But I think what it does mean is that, you know, for a long time, we've been a bit limited in terms of the work that we've been able to do in relation to women in this area, and it allows us now to work more concertedly on protecting the rights of sex workers, who are often overlooked in the research and the studies and in terms of human rights abuses, because, like you said, when people stigmatise against them and discriminate against them, they get driven further underground, and it's harder to engage with that group. But I think it is very important that us as an organisation, that we're shining a light and highlighting abuses that happen within the sex industry.
Is there a timeline going forward?
What's next? Well, we don't have a major global campaign on this, but it just opens up the doors, I guess, in terms of having the advocacy and the lobbying with government to talk to them about our research and what we think they need to be doing to improve human rights in this area.
Kate, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Kate Schutze, Law and Policy Program, Amnesty International, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.